wasn't it? I mean, it's got to be the only logical explanation, right? Woman runs for president of France and loses to a man? Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, 800-222-5222. And also my email, sam@samnation.com. If you'd like to be on the program and have something to say, can't call, email me. And I will address it on air. Now, so this French election, and by the way, other stuff going on too. Sally Yates, James Clapper were on the Hill this morning and made some stunning admissions. I want to get into those two a little bit later this hour. Now, so why does it matter? Why does this French election, who cares about it? Well, I think it's important to us for a number of reasons. First of all, this is being completely misinterpreted by the mainstream media. You know, it didn't take very long, but there already have been some articles. I knew this would happen, by the way. Let's see. The Washington Post stated a recap on this, and they said Macron, also pronounce it Macaroon if you wish. Won from a precarious place, the middle. Governing from there could be even harder. And by the way, libs love the middle, but they redefine the middle. It's always left of the middle. But I'll show you what I mean here. Now he says, here's what they say with this election. At stake, this is the Washington Post today. At stake is not only his presidency and the future of a nation of 67 million, but also, and listen to this, here it is, and also mainstream politics across the Western world. By thoroughly defeating far-right leader Marine Le Pen, Macron instantly became a symbol among those in Europe and North America who are seeking a new style of politics that can break the populist fever. Close quote. So this is now the analysis. Macron is the mold, the prototype, the savior, the person who can save us or save the West from Trumpism. And this was this was the Battle of Waterloo, right? This was it. There was another populist about to get elected, and this Macron guy stood in the way and stopped Marine Le Pen at the gates. Turned her away, defeated and done. Now, I tell you, the better analysis here is first and foremost, Marine Le Pen is not a Donald Trump type candidate. The left very much would love to link the two of them together, but make no mistake, Trump is sort of a swashbuckling pirate. Marine Le Pen is a politician. She's an experienced politician. She's been in politics her entire life, inherited a party and a political movement from her dad, who I should add is absolutely insane. Le Pen Senior is, and I do not throw this out normally because it's an overused term, but he is an avowed anti-Semite. I mean, he's a Holocaust denier. He's crazy. Now, Le Pen has more evolved opinions about the matter, but still has been accused of harboring some of these views. But it's more than that. If you look at her party platform, I'll ask you this. Would you vote for this? She wants to promote smart protectionism, ban foreign companies with tax schemes that optimize savings from having access to public markets. Yeah, can you imagine that? That's like, everybody, right? Google, Microsoft. Doesn't sound very good for our businesses operating in France. Create a patriotic economy. I don't know what that means, but it doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound good to free market people like we are. You know, this is not good. Create a sovereign fund to protect French companies for vulture funds and takeovers. Why, that's socialism. Imagine you create the government basically puts money in a pot somewhere in order to, you know, to fund government assistance for companies, maybe French companies that are being taken over by gosh forbid, some foreign company. Pretty anti-competitive. Ban foreign investors, da-da-da-da-da, all this stuff. Now, by the way, this is all the things that people have accused Trump, and granted, some of Trump's rhetoric during the campaign maybe touched the fringes of this, but no, Trump at the end of the day is a capitalist. He's a businessman. And that, Marine Le Pen is not. The fact that she got a third of the vote with some of this crazy stuff that's in her platform is actually scary. And so these libs that are comforting themselves and patting themselves on, look at this, Macron stopped this thing from happening. It's not necessarily as good and as rosy as they make it sound. Now, the problem is for us, okay, we have Macron in office. Macron was endorsed by none other than President Obama. And I think you'll remember, it was a few weeks back, I played the clip where he recorded the gushing phone call that the two of them had. And Obama was giving him a thumbs up, and Macron immediately puts it on his social media account. It could play out interestingly for us, right? Trump has shown that he's willing to work with Trudeau and other people who I think he's not exactly on the same page with politically. But it is kind of a major bummer when your, largest and most significant political opponent, that is Obama to Trump, I think, has openly supported the candidate that is now president. And so that may be an interesting play. We'll see how that develops. Now, the other thing that I anticipate, it hasn't hit yet. But do you remember, did you hear over the weekend how there was an enormous cache of documents that had been looted, apparently by Russian hackers? Now, if this sounds familiar, don't worry. It's not a broken record. It's true. It happened in France. Russian hackers, supposedly, and they figured this out immediately because the Russian hackers, they apparently took all the information, organized it, put it on an Excel spreadsheet program that was built for the Russian market. So it could either be Russian hackers who want themselves to be known as being Russian hackers, or it could be somebody completely different who wants it to be known to that. Anyway, you get the point. But you know what happened in France? Total ban on publication, right? None of the information, and supposedly there was some damaging stuff in there on Macron and on his campaign. None of it got out. And the cry will be, I promise you this, the cry will be to look at France. What a great place this is. Look, that is how we should do things. And it's a very, very dangerous argument. Because remember, I always will tell you, let the First Amendment do its thing. The First Amendment allows for the free exchange of ideas, good, bad, and the ugly. Let them out. And holding things back in gag orders is not the way we do things in America. But the left will look at this election as an example of that's what we should have done. Now, finally, I'll tell you this about the election itself and about the platform, what to expect from President Macron. Well, euro, absolutely. This is a vote for the European Union. The European Union will be strengthened. The euro was up today, went to its highest high in the last 6 months. So look for more of the same from the European Union. But also remember, one of the key promises that this guy made was to keep the borders open. In fact, from his platform, he called the EU the best guarantee of peace, an offer for his nation. During the campaign, he also called for a pan-European Security Council to bring together military personnel, diplomats, intelligence experts who would advise heads of state in events such as terror attacks. Okay, let me tell you, this is exactly what France has been missing this entire time. And it's a continuation of the same policies that they've had in the last 10 years. Their wide open borders not vetting the people that come in. It's worse in our country because they have this thing called the Schengen zone. They allow anybody and everybody in. If you cross the border, you know, three states away, you can just enter France. There's no border checkpoints. And this is important because as Trump's travel ban gets massacred through the courts, and as, and you'll hear, I'll play, Sally Yates actually talked about it today on Capitol Hill. Big discussions about letting people in. And there's this movement, there's this doctrine that the left has adopted and is intent on shoving down our throats, which is let everybody in. There's no such thing as an illegal human, right? You've heard that. No human being is illegal. It's not security. Look, this guy, the European Union and getting together some experts, that's how we secure our country. No, genius. Here's how you secure a country. You don't let in Muslim extremists. Start there. It's not a, it's, it, there's nothing unusual about it. The reason that you've got a country with total gun control. The reason you've got militant Islamists in the country with AK-47s, automatic weapons, is because your borders are open, you nincompoop. Don't you get it? And this kind of naivete is what we're dealing with our own leftists here. I'm mystified. I mean, these are the same people who want to, on the topic of security, who want to ban every gun. You know, a liberal's dream is to confiscate weapons, create a national registry, knock on every door, say, your rifle, please. But at the same time, let anybody and everybody in. Don't build a wall. Don't protect the border. So in that genius setup, here's the real world scoop. Only the bad guys are armed. The bad guys are here. Have no problems getting here. They're not vetted. They're not screened. And among, you know, among this mass of immigration, you have people who are here who are going to harm us. Plain and simple. I would say, actually, and my mom is in Paris right now, was there last night during the election results said, well, she said a couple of interesting things. One, conservatives don't riot. So they were ready for huge riots in Paris, anticipating that perhaps somehow an unforeseen Le Pen win would result in crowds filling the streets. That didn't happen. So the night was kind of a dull fizzle. And so that's, you know, that's one thing. It's just an interesting development for the Western world right now. You know that he walked up when he accepted to give his victory speech, he walked up on stage and the EU anthem was playing and not the French Marseillaise. Can you imagine if President Trump any U.S. president, can you imagine? I'm curious, what would your impression be if we had a president that got up on stage after winning an election and played an anthem of some other group, some other entity that is not our country, that is not our national anthem? I'm baffled. And this is why, in the long run, I think the whole European Union experiment is going to fail. I think eventually people in these countries will want to have their identity back. And they're going to find a candidate who is not Marine Le Pen, who's not nuts on a host of issues that really do matter. We'll find a candidate that is more of a Trump than a Le Pen. And then you'll also, at that point, we'll want to rid themselves of this overlord. I tell you, here in the U.S., we would never wear this. Imagine if we form some state with Canada and Mexico. Don't laugh. That's what the EU is. What if we called it the NAFTA Union? And we had a national anthem, an anthem for the union. Would it have a mariachi band? I don't know. But no American would ever wear that. It wouldn't work. We wouldn't like it. And if you think the French are different, yes, they are. They are different people. But trust me, there is no group of individuals that think more highly of their culture, of their history, of their identity than the French. I guarantee you this. So again, I always try to inform you. I try to give you the behind the scenes look and get against the grain of all the conventional thinking out there. You're going to get a lot of conventional thinking on this topic. Their president is 39. That's young. Jeez. I think he's shaving as of 2 years ago, so we'll get more details on that. Sam Rogowski, back after this.
Say, what is it?
You know what it is. 790,
790,
790. KABC. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation back. One observation, too, about the French election. As it relates to our own, you know, I hear from a lot of people when we're in the middle of a presidential race, kind of bemoaning how much money's involved, how long it takes, just the general, I don't know. There's a lot of election fatigue and we're barely recovering from the 2016 race. So I hesitate to bring this up, but I will. I think our system, our election system, or the timing of our elections is very good. And I'll explain. This Macron guy, 39 years old, formed his own political party. He has a very short stint as a minister of economics. So he, you know, a little bit of time in the government, but otherwise he was an investment banker, young guy, and totally untested, right? He's not, you know, not really somebody who has a long resume. I have a theory. I do not think that a guy like Macron could have survived a U.S. presidential election. And the reason for it is, look, the French election started, when did he announce? November 2016. And then the election was the 23rd of April, and then the first round, and the second round was May 7th. How quick is that? I mean, how much can you really find out about a candidate in a matter of, what is that, 6 months? I tell you, probably not a lot. And the answer is, when did Trump announce? That would have been summer of 2015, right? And then the election is a year and a half later. And you always hear the argument, gosh, the race is starting sooner and sooner. But I think our system of primaries where, I mean, look, you had eight, how many different, how many different candidates were there in the end? I always forget the number. You get through so many different candidates. It wasn't true on the Democratic side, of course, which resulted in, I would argue, a lower quality of candidate in the final round. But certainly a candidate that can survive a year and a half of scrutiny is better vetted for the job of president than a candidate who barely gets through 6 months. And that's, I think, a significant benefit of our system and why I look at the way our elections work, and I think they work quite well. You know another thing? You know that first round of elections? This is fascinating. 36 million people voted in the first round and only 31 million in the French election voted in the second round. That means, what's that? That's a 5 million people. That's not insignificant in a country of 67 million. 5 million people just dropped out and didn't vote at all. Were pissed off. They're just pissed off at the way the system worked. Didn't like either candidate. And it's interesting because our elections, typically, we more people will vote in the general election than in the primary. More people get engaged. And the reason is that when you have a consolidation of candidates on the right and a consolidation of candidates on the left, you're in a better position to end up with two candidates that most people have a preference for one or the other. And when you have this silly second round nonsense where, you know, the top two vote getters, it's kind of like California now. We end up, you know, it's like an open primary in California. We end up with two Democrats on the ballot. And then I hear from you asking me, Sam, what do I do? Who do I vote for? I don't like either one of these clowns. And I suspect many of you may not have even voted for a Senate candidate this last round. And I understand that, even though you went to the polls and happily were voting for a presidential candidate. So it's a good reminder that our system works well here, and that we should be grateful for it. And that when in the middle of the presidential race, where you're like, gosh, not another debate, I don't want to hear it anymore. You go, look, it's an important job. And if you can, you've got to be able to survive a year and a half of interviews. That's really what it is. And like I said, I think any company, important position, takes some time to pick the right candidate. All right, we got John Wolf up next with the news. And then let's get into the Sally Yates and James Clapper situation. Want to talk about that when we come back. Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, back after this.
Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KABC, back in the studio live from our undisclosed location deep behind the orange curtain. Safe and sound, snug as a bug. And ready to unpackage today's news. So Sally Yates, now remember, she is the attorney in the Justice Department who was a deputy attorney there, and she ended up becoming the acting attorney general because, you know, Obama's attorney general got the boot on the day Obama left office, and then Trump's attorney general didn't get sworn in for a long time because his nomination was held up in Congress. So this gal, who's a holdover from the Obama administration, ends up being in charge of the Trump Justice Department. Now, everybody knows what happened. This was rigged and cooked from the start. They brought Sally Yates is there, and she is doing everything she can. She's like enemy behind the lines. You know, she's like sabotaging everything that Trump is trying to do. And one of the things that she sabotaged was Trump's executive order on his travel ban, right? Remember that? Trump issues his first travel ban, and the issue is the Justice Department has to defend it. Because remember, there was an assault on it launched in the courts where, you know, different state attorney generals, first in the Midwest and then in Hawaii, went to the courts, sought injunctive relief and got it. And the Justice Department didn't fight back because this lady, Sally Yates, refused to defend it. Now we find out why. Finally, she's testifying to Congress. And Senator Cornyn from Texas asks her and is discussing, obviously, this history, right? She talks about how it's her in her position. It's important that she defend any actions of the president, and talks about how the travel ban, how it was first reviewed by the Office of Legal Counsel. This is a group of attorneys that work for the White House, and they review documents, they review any executive orders, and they make sure that those documents and orders are legal, right? So they give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. I would assume they help rewrite executive orders to make sure that they're lawful on their face. Now, that on their face part of this is very important. And I'll give you my perspective on it here after I play for you this clip. And this is Senator Cornyn asking a question, and then you'll listen to Sally Yates' answer.
What is your authority to overrule the Office of Legal Counsel when it comes to a legal determination?
The Office of Legal Counsel has a narrow function, and that is to look at the face of an executive order and to determine purely on its face whether there is some set of circumstances under which at least some part of the executive order may be lawful. And importantly, they do not look beyond the face of the executive order. For example, it's statements that are made contemporaneously or prior to the execution of the EO that may bear on its intent and purpose. That office does not look at those factors. And in determining the constitutionality of this executive order, that was an important analysis to engage in and one that I did.
Aha! So this is it. Now I'll explain what this intent and purpose means. You know, she's saying on its face, Trump's ban, right, travel ban, executive order is legal. But she goes beyond that, our role, my role as Attorney General and the Justice Department's role is to look beyond the face of the document. Now, when I come back, I want to explain what this means, what the legal theory behind this is. And also, you'll realize this is absolute total hogwash. This is the same flawed logic that these Court of Appeals justices, you know, in the Ninth Circus and elsewhere have used to put a stop to this executive order. And this is why, by the way, this is totally going to get thrown out in the Supreme Court. No question about it. But I got to explain this when we come back. Sam Rzhovsky back right after this.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Sally Yates testified today she decided not to defend Trump's travel ban because she felt that the executive order had a different intent and purpose. Now, this, by the way, she's a lawyer, right? She works for the Justice Department. And she was briefly acting attorney general. There are two schools of thought on this legally. There's two types of, I would say legal philosophies that are in play. When you talk about a justice, I'll give you, for example, Antonin Scalia. You know, Scalia was an originalist, but he was an example of a judge who didn't look at legislative intent, didn't care if a law had, I don't know, said everyone needs to drive green cars. He wouldn't look at what do you think they intended when they passed that law? Did they really not like red cars, or did they intend to discriminate against people in red cars? Were people in red cars more likely to be minorities? Maybe minorities like red cars. So maybe you see where I'm going with this? It gets absurd. I remember dealing with this in law school. You get some professors who are really big on this stuff. And then there's just a plain meaning of a law. It's a law. It's got words on the page. Read the words and tell me what they mean. Don't try to guess into it something that's not there. So what's happening with these Trump travel bans is Trump is on the campaign trail talking about a Muslim ban. Because the way Trump communicates is he takes big words, big concepts, big things, whatever, and reduces them down into slogans. Because that's what you do when you're campaigning for president, okay? That's how it works. And that's why he was so effective. But she's saying, okay, Yates and others, okay, who are looking at this and finding ways to stop these executive orders, they're looking at that intent and purpose. Remember that clip I played last segment? Intent and purpose. And are trying to say Trump is intending to discriminate against Muslim applicants for visas. Never mind that Indonesia, one of the most populous Muslim countries in the world, is not on the list and so forth and so on. Trump intends to ban Muslims because he said so on the campaign trail. And that's why, even though the Office of Legal Counsel has looked at it and said, on its face, this executive order is legal and will stand up to scrutiny, she refused to support it. And then you'll remember, of course, as soon as she refused to support it, Trump fired her and put a different person in her place. This is the left's opposition to Trump, and it's bigger than Sally Yates. But the great thing is we have it today. We got this in testimony. People aren't really talking about it. It's focusing on some of the other stuff that I think is important, too. But we got this as a stunning admission that a holdover from the Obama administration decided to come up with this. This was her theory on why she wasn't going to do her job. And more importantly, isn't it funny? It's the exact same legal theory that some of these judges that were in the Ninth Circuit that upheld the challenge to Trump's travel ban. Same exact legal theory. No, I'm not. They didn't collude. They didn't talk. It's not like that. In fact, that would have really been criminal. But they're all the same liberals. They all have the same ideas of how the law ought to be interpreted. And when it comes to the law, for me, I'll tell you, this is my personal legal philosophy, is you look at the four corners of the page. It's not complicated. And I think I've shared this with you before. It's actually the bigger idiots in law school are usually the ones who are always talking about legislative intent. They're always the people who don't know or don't want to talk about black letter law and go off on silly tangents about, well, I think the lawmaker meant this. It's silliness. But this is the way a liberal legal mind thinks. And it should frighten you half to death. It does me. All right, back right after this.
Talk Radio, Talk Radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky here. Another little tidbit that happened earlier today on Capitol Hill. Along with Sally Yates, we also heard testimony from James Clapper. And I'll tell you, this is an interesting thing. Now, he's being asked here by Senator Grassley as the head spook, right? One of the head intel community guys in the Obama administration. It's being asked about unmasking. Now, you remember what unmasking is? When they take away, remove a name, right? They have a name, they cover it up if it's a U.S. person, but then they remove it later to show, if you need to find out who it is, to figure out context and things like that. Big deal, right? Here is Senator Chuck Grassley asking Clapper and Yates, did you ever unmask Trump? Here's what he asked.
Mr. Clapper and Ms. Yates, did either of you ever request the unmasking of Mr. Trump, his associates, or any member of Congress?
Yes. In one case, I did.
I can specifically recall, but I can't discuss it any further than that.
You can't? So if I ask you for details, you said you can't discuss that? Is that what you said?
Not here.
Do you think he really needed a full, 5 seconds to think about if he ever unmasked somebody? Do you? Because this is a big deal. Everybody's been talking about this. This guy, guilty of sin. I'm telling you, the story that comes from here, it's not going to be about Russia and the election and Trump. It's not even going to be about Mike Flynn and his involvement with the Russians and how he was compromised, if at all. The real story here will be the abuse by the Obama administration of the NSA, of the intelligence community, for political purposes. Trust me. That will be the story here. Now, I got so excited today, I forgot to talk even about my good friend, Sweet James. I don't know if he's been picked up in any transmissions by the intel community. I doubt it, though he represents all sorts of people, so you never know. When you're a champion for the regular guy, you never know. What happens when you get into an accident? What do you do? Well, one thing you don't try to do, you don't turn it into a do-it-yourself project. You don't talk to the insurance company. You don't talk to the adjuster. Those people are only there to hurt you, okay, to help themselves, to protect their company. So don't do it. Don't talk to them. Instead, call Sweet James. Sweet James Bergner, the only lawyer that we trust here on the program to get the job done for you. He's a good guy. He's a champion. He'll fight for you. And most importantly, he won't let anyone on the other side take advantage. All right, so how do you reach him? It's easy. 800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit sweetjames.com. All right, we're out of time. We'll be back tomorrow at 7. Can't wait. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC.
Radio 790
KABC.